You won't get a perfectly clean cut subject everywhere you go shoot. For all of those locations you go where the subject isn't super obvious, this episode is going to help you to find great compositions in those areas. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Learn Landscape Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Austin James Jackson. I'm super excited you guys are here. Just returned from a fantastic workshop a couple weeks back, and it got me thinking about the things that we're talking about in today's episode, which is capturing photos in places that aren't so obvious. You know, I also do a workshop on the Southern Oregon coast, which covers the redwoods as well. And that's another location where photographers seem to struggle, myself included, but definitely the clients on my workshop, they struggle. And the reason is because when you go into the forest or, you know, even out here sometimes in the Utah desert, the subject might not be super obvious to you. You know, it's not like hiking to a waterfall and this is the waterfall. This is the subject, what you're shooting, or, you know, going to a lake with a mountain where this is the lake, this is the mountain, this is what you're shooting. You know, when you're in the forest, you can really shoot anything from, you know, the wide angle, and maybe you have some cool trees and some flowers and some ferns and whatever, or you can zoom in and get that telephoto shot. Either way, though, it's not a location that the compositions scream at you. You have to go find the compositions, and that can cause a lot of challenges and issues for photographers who may struggle to find that. So I decided to enlist the help of Gary Randall, who's somebody that is so good at this particular concept. He does workshops in the forest up in Oregon, and he does many other workshops as well, but specifically his Oregon workshops, where I've seen so many of his great images from the forest, and I just realized that those compositions that he's found are not super obvious. You know, he's worked really hard to find those compositions. So, of course, I wanted to pick his brain on how we can capture those compositions ourselves. So hopefully the conversation is helpful for you. So anyways, without waiting any longer, here's my conversation with Gary Randall. All right. Today on the podcast, really excited to welcome Gary Randall. Gary, thanks for taking the time and welcome to the podcast. Will you start off by telling us about yourself for any of our listeners that may not be familiar with you or your work?
Sure. I'm a full-time landscape photographer. I live near Mount Hood, Oregon, about 50 or 60 miles east of Portland. And I've been doing this full-time for almost 25 years, a good solid 20 years, I've been doing this very same thing. Landscape photography kind of took over my life at one point, and it hasn't let go of me. So I started back before social media and all the stuff that landscape photography has become today, especially with the online experience that is such a important part of photography today. So yeah, I'm married. I've been married for about 5 years. The wife that I have now, I've got a little dog that goes out with me, and have a Jeep that I take out into the hinterlands. And this is just the life that I've chosen. So I used to be an engineer at one time and got out of that field about midlife, and I've just been doing this ever since.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, I know. I've certainly been following your work for quite some time now. And in today's episode, I'm really excited to talk about something that I think is really important, and it's really often overlooked, which is about finding compositions in locations where the composition might not be so obvious. There's obviously a ton of locations that are really popular for landscape photography where the subject's very clear. You know, you go to, you know, a lake and there's a lake and a mountain. It's obvious that's what you're shooting. It's wide angle. whatever. You go to a popular waterfall, it's obvious what you're shooting. But there's other locations that might not be quite so obvious. And I think when I looked a little deeper into your portfolio, there was a really impressive body of work from many of those spots where there's not like an obvious subject. Will you start off by telling us your approach when you're visiting a location that might not have that obvious subject, if that makes sense?
Sure. Makes total sense. But typically, if I'm at a location with my camera and I'm somehow inspired to take a photograph there, there's probably some reason that I'm there, something that has caught my eye. It doesn't necessarily have to be a dominant subject, like a waterfall or a creek or something like that. But it could be anything from an anomalous tree, some sort of a tree that stands out, or some flowers, rock formations, sand patterns, different sinuous or repeated patterns from the trees with light coming through. There's a lot of reasons to be able to go or be able to get a photograph at a location like that. It doesn't necessarily have to be a prominent subject in a photograph. So there's probably a good chance that I have spotted something at that place. It's rare that I show up and look at a place and I'm uninspired and then have to try to figure out how to create a good photo from it. So
yes. I'm curious, I guess for our listeners, what advice would you give somebody if they're, you know, shooting a subject or shooting a scene rather that doesn't have the clear cut and dry subject? I mean, what specifically should, I guess you said you would be inspired by something, but like, what is it? Are you for, you know, maybe things that look different and stand out, or like, what is there any advice you'd give? I don't even know how to word this question, but like, what advice would you give for somebody going to a location where that cut and dry subject is not there?
Well, first thing that you should do is you look at the overall scene. And if for some reason there isn't something that's impactful in that scene, then what I usually try to do is that I start moving in on the scene and start looking at different smaller scenes, different areas in the scene. I might start looking more towards abstract or semi-abstract situations in the scene. I'll approach a scene from ultra wide all the way down to macro. And so typically when I'm at a scene, if I can't see something that's completely obvious, then I'll start going into trying to come up with some sort of an impressionist image of some sort or abstract. I try to find, repeated patterns or anomalies in the scene, complementary situations. I also try to see if I can find anything that might involve basic compositional standards. If I can find a lead-in of some sort that will take the viewer from the back or the front of the photo back to the back. It could be a log. It could be some sort of a little stream. It could be practically anything. I usually try to do that. I like to be able to lead the viewer from the front to the back. And if I'm in a forest scene, what I will commonly do is try to find some sort of a scene that will allow the viewer to go from the foreground, which might be a little darker, back into the background where the sun might be coming filtering through the trees. And so even a lead-in line will create depth, but then again, the light in a scene will also create depth. So if you're starting in the front with a little bit darker, you're moving your way into the back, that's going to create some depth in the scene. But if these, you know, in a photograph, especially a landscape, doesn't necessarily have to have a subject. Once you have a prominent subject, the photograph becomes about just that subject instead of, a lot of times, instead of the whole scene in itself. And a scene can have a single component. It can have multiple components. And as the impact of the photograph is how all of those components work together. So you start working with composition, start moving it in and out on the scene. So I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, no, that's perfect. I am wondering, there's a lot of interesting things you talked about there that brought up a few things, but I'm first and foremost just wondering how, in your opinion, how much of the process of creating a great image in, you know, some of these places that don't have that obvious thing that you might shoot, how much would you attribute your image creation process to post-processing?
Well, you know, when I first started in digital and picked up Photoshop, my skill level in the field wasn't as good as it is now. And so as time has passed, my processing has actually become simpler. And I know that with a lot of photographers, they start out pretty simple and then become more complex in their workflow as time goes by, where I've kind of been the opposite. The better that I become out in the field, the more capable and the more complete the files that I bring back from the field are. So if I've got, if I came back with a nice, impactful photograph, then I'm not trying to enhance it as much to make something that wasn't there, or I'm not trying to correct inefficiencies or flaws that I have created out in the field. So in other words, the better that the files that I'm taking in the field are, the less processing that I have to do. But there are a lot of times when I will shape the light in the scene or enhance the light. And chances are, most of the time when I'm doing my processing, it's usually dealing with the light in the scene. It's either enhancing it or somehow redirecting it in the scene. And so, and dodging and burning is an important tool in my workflow, as well as vignetting. And a vignette doesn't have to be all the way around the photo. It could just be a darkening of the foreground a little bit to allow more of a disparity between the dark and the light in the scenes. So yeah, processing itself is important, because what you're doing when you're in the field is collecting digital information that you'll convert into a photograph in post-processing. But like I said, it really shouldn't be used to, in my world, it shouldn't be used to create something that really wasn't there, or to try to correct inefficiencies or flaws that you have created while you're out in the field. So
yeah, I really like I like that whole answer, but one thing I wanted to highlight for anyone listening is the vignette, because I think a vignette is such an important part of the photo process as well. And I loved how you mentioned that the vignette doesn't have to cover the full frame. You know, the worst way to make a vignette is by using the vignette slider, because then it just puts a perfect oval on your photo. And like you said, a vignette, a lot of times, maybe it's just on the foreground, or, you know, a lot of times for me personally, I might have my vignette on three sides of the frame because there's light coming from maybe the left. So I might darken the top right all the way through the bottom left, but not the top left. Yeah. And it is crazy to me. I just came off a workshop last week, and like, just how amazed people were at how much better their photo looks when, I mean, you don't do this on every photo, but in a good majority of photos, if you just add a linear gradient with and darken the foreground, like, it helps so much to kind of get people's eyes off of the things that are not super detailed in the foreground and get it onto the subject or the grand scene or whatever it is.
You know, it's doing more than affecting the light in the scene. It's also allowing you to control how the viewer of your photograph interacts with it. So like you said, if you're darkening the foreground to allow the background to be a bit more of to stand out a little bit more. In other words, the foreground isn't as important as the the mid or background, then you can certainly subdue that. But the way I handle my vignettes is that I'll create a 50% gray layer, and then I'll use a large soft brush to go around, you know, very similar to burning in, you know, certain areas of the photograph. So my, like I said, my vignette isn't going to go into any place that's bright, like the sky up above. There's going to be a good chance that it's going to be just in the foreground. Now, there are times, depending on the composition and the scene, that a vignette all the way around works, but it's typically in a situation where you're trying to draw the viewer's eyes towards maybe the center of the photograph. In other words, one that doesn't have a prominent sky in the top that you have to worry about darkening with a vignette.
Yeah, and or a prominent light source or an abstract or something like that. So I'm wondering, I know you mentioned you try not to use post-processing to fix deficiencies in the field, but I'm curious if you have any editing tricks that people can use to improve maybe a weak subject or a weak composition in the field, or would you simply just throw it away and edit another shot? Or just any way to slightly improve, you know, maybe a composition that you feel like is good, but it's not great. Do you got any tricks for that?
Well, sure. And it really kind of goes back to controlling the light in the photograph, you know. And so for some reason, your subject isn't as strong as you feel it should be, then you can certainly do some dodging and burning, or lightening and darkening certain areas in the photograph to be able to allow the subject to stand out more. But typically, if the subject is an important part of the composition, then it's good to be able to pay attention to that subject first and get your exposure and your focus and everything right in the field. That way, when you come back, you, like I said before, you've got good digital information to be able to deal with that. But, you know, the best way to make your subject stand out is to make it a bit brighter or more prominent in the foreground.
I want to take a break from today's episode and talk about a really cool opportunity if you are a beginner or intermediate photographer that is really serious about taking better photos and getting better at photography. Now, usually about 4 to 6 times a year, I teach in-person workshops around the Western United States centered around helping you become a better photographer. Now, my workshops are kept to just 5 people, which means that you will get plenty of one-on-one attention. So regardless of your skill level, whether you just picked up your first camera or whether you've been shooting for 15 years, I promise you, you're going to get so much out of it. I'm going to cater the class directly to you. Best of all, after the workshop, I'm going to add you to my alumni group on Facebook, where you can get literally weekly image feedback. We can connect at all times. When the workshop is over, it's not done. I'm still going to be your mentor. I'm going to be there to help you and become better at photography. Now, like I said, if you're serious about becoming better at photography, don't wait any longer. Register for one of my workshops this year. You can visit austinjamesjackson.com/workshops. That link will be down below in the podcast description that you can click on as well. I really can't wait to see you guys out there. I know one of the things I think when I think about kind of what we're talking about in this episode and finding those compositions in those lesser photographed or less obvious places, generally I think about the forest. And, you know, there is other locations that are like this, but generally the forest is one of the big ones. And, you know, I'm sure you see on your you do some workshops in the forest in the Columbia River Gorge, and I'm sure you see people that probably struggle to find good compositions. I see it when I do a Redwoods workshop, and it's one of the more difficult places. And my personal opinion is that the biggest challenge is there is too much clutter. Yeah. Would you agree with that, or?
Oh, absolutely. The forest is going to be one of the most complicated scenes that you'll photograph. The complexity is caused by so much texture, clutter, and whatnot. And so, my approach to composing a scene, even beyond a scene that's very complex like that is to simplify the scene. And so when I compose a photograph, typically I'll start wide and then I'll use my zoom to be able to move in, move it left or right, up or down until I have the scene simplified and less complicated. So if you use an ultra wide lens, it just stands to reason that you're going to be collecting all of the complexity in the scene. And so if you're overwhelmed by the complexity, then the best approach is to start simplifying your composition. I was taught in art that the best composition is one where it includes everything that's important and then eliminates all the stuff that isn't important. So that's my approach.
Yeah.
You know, if a person looks at the composition, the style of composition that's common in my photographs, they will notice that a lot of my comps aren't necessarily ultra wide, and they're compressed into a more compact composition. I like to use my go-to lens for landscape is typically my 24-70, but I really love using my 70-200. So
yeah, the more you zoom in, the easier it is to remove things.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's easier. And one thing I talked probably about a month ago on the podcast, I talked with Ian Plant about composition, and he brought up a term for something that I had been using, but I never really had a term for it. And he called it edge patrol, where you pay attention to what is on the edges of your frame, because a lot of photographers, I think especially newer photographers, are so focused on what's in the middle of your frame, what's the subject, that they don't pay attention to the supporting elements. And sure, a lot of times, you know, cutting things off on the edge, or, you know, having a bright spot on the edge, that's really distracting. And that it's like one of the best ways that you can make your photo not very exciting is by having distracting things on the edges. So I love how you said that everything in the photo should be, everything is very important. Everything should add to the photo. And in my opinion, if it doesn't add to the photo, it's actually taken away from the photo.
Yeah. If it's relevant to the scene, keep it. If it's not, and you're able to zoom in and cut it off, then do that. I admire Ian Plant, and I've been following him for a long time. And what he's saying is completely true. And then, but using a vignette is another way to be able to minimize the stuff that's on the outside that isn't relevant and allow the viewer to move in towards the center of the photograph where it might be a little bit more relevant. So,
absolutely. I am wondering, there's a lot of questions that I ask where I have an idea of probably what you're going to say. And this is a question that I have absolutely no idea. And I always wonder how other photographers do it, but I'm curious, in scenes that you would typically find in the forest and those places where there's not an obvious subject, do you find your compositions I know you said you start wide and zoom in, but generally if you're just walking around trying to find something cool, are you looking for an interesting foreground and then you're going to find the background, or do you look more for the background / subject and then you try and find a foreground that complements it well? And like, I guess just what does the process of finding an image look like in a scene like that?
Well, my first approach is going to be finding some sort of a scene or a foreground that's interesting and beautiful. And then after that, then the background is going to support that. It's going to be a background to the interesting subject that I have. It could be a rock, could be some flowers. It could be a little creek, or, you know, it could be practically anything. But if the foreground has an interesting subject in it, that's going to be the first thing that you're going to concentrate on. Then the background is just going to be a background for it. Now, if I'm going through the forest and there really isn't a whole lot in the foreground that interests me, but for some reason the background looks pretty cool, it could be light, the way light's coming through the trees or hitting moss or something. It doesn't necessarily have to be a a scene that has three dimensions, foreground, middle ground, and background. You can have a single dimension scene that works great. And typically the background in a forest like that is going to be that single dimensional composition. And so I will typically hope for a nice foreground, maybe a creek coming through the trees or something. But in lieu of that, I will pay a lot of attention to the background, looking for, you know, more abstract or impressionistic style of images using that technique, you know, just going, looking out into the distance and then and going from there. You know, it could be I was photographing ponderosa pines in Central Oregon. And the scene really didn't have much of a foreground, but it had these beautiful pine trees that had these beautiful vertical patterns when you looked into them and then, you know, cropped into just the trees themselves. And so the repeated patterns and the vertical lines they created in there created a single dimension composition that really looked really good. That certainly could have been done with a foreground with the trees in the background, but because there wasn't really a foreground, the background itself was strong enough to be able to support the composition.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Is there something, I just kind of thought about this, is there any common mistake that you see photographers making when it comes to composition, like on your workshops, for example, like when you're working directly with people?
I have to think about that because that's considering another person's way of looking at the scene.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think that something that's really common is that I've noticed in my workshops is that the photographer will concentrate more off into the distance and overlook things that are down in front of them. So having a tall tripod and shooting off in the distance isn't necessarily going to create a shot that's got more depth and maybe an interesting subject. And so I try to get people to not necessarily have a tall tripod, look down towards their feet, look for something. You know, sometimes you could just move up to the left or to the right and be able to find, you know, a different composition. But it's real common for a person to just set up the tripod tall and then shoot off into the distance and then gather the whole huge scene instead of trying to concentrate on a simpler, more compact composition. I think that's probably the one thing that comes to my mind.
Yeah, that's super helpful and good piece of advice there. Earlier, you did talk a little bit about dodging and burning. You said it's an important part of your workflow. Would you be able to give a little bit of advice for some of our listeners to do it in a way that looks both realistic and impactful? Because I find that there's a lot of people that know how to dodge and burn, you know, Photoshop 50% gray layer, soft light or overlay. But I find a lot of people struggle to make it look realistic and like, and obviously when you're dodging and burning, you don't want someone to look at your photo and say, oh, there's a lot of dodging and burning. And when I look at your photos, I can't tell that, but there's a lot of people I can tell when there's a lot of dodging and burning. So do you have any advice on that aspect?
Well, what I teach when it comes to vignetting and dodging and burning is that you want to be able to dodge and burn and control the light in the scene, but you don't want the dodging or the dark or the burning, I should say, into the dark parts to stand out. So I tell people to create your vignette, do your dodging and burning, and then walk away, come back to it, and then take a look at it. And if it's all standing out to you a little bit too much, then go back, maybe vary the opacity of it, you know, or redo it. But you want the vignetting or the dodging and burning to be able to control the look and the light in your photo, but you don't want your viewer to be able to notice it over the top of the overall look of the photograph itself. So be subtle. Don't be heavy-handed with it. Be selective with it. In other words, do it just in the areas that it's going to positively affect the photograph. But be very subtle and gentle with it. So.
And is there a certain point in the editing process that you usually recommend people to do that dodging and burning or the vignetting? Like, are those last steps something you should do at the start? Do you have a preference?
Well, you know, I have a basic start to my workflow that I typically go through, but it's typically things like adjusting the exposure perhaps, or doing the basic adjustments. And then after I have all the basic adjustments, in other words, making sure my highlights are covered, my shadows are looking good, and the overall tone of the photograph is looking good. And then after that, I will go back and then start to selectively burn in areas or apply a vignette. And so there's a basic workflow that needs to be done before you start shaping and controlling the light, but it's all just basic things, you know? So
the last question that I always ask here on the podcast, and it doesn't have to do with what we've talked about, or it can if you want, but if you had one piece of advice for a landscape photographer that is trying to improve their photography, like many of the listeners of the podcast are, what would that piece of advice be?
It's hard to just come up with one, I guess, but...
I know, sorry.
No, that's okay. What I can do is recommend that you try not to find shortcuts in your photography. Shortcuts rarely get you to where you want to be. So while you're in the field, make sure you're very aware of getting your composition, and making sure that you're getting your focus, and make sure that you're getting your exposure right out in the field. Pay very close attention to your histogram. That's going to tell you graphically. And the best way to tell if your exposure is right in the field is to follow your histogram. But if you have the exposure right, if you have the composition right, and you have your focus right, you have everything that you need afterwards to be able to put your photo together. So, and getting your focus right may have to do with doing some focus stacking, although I do my best not to focus stack. I have a method that I use. I like to stop down. I like to stop down as much as I realistically can. And then I will maybe back away from my foreground a little bit, because the closer you get to your foreground, the shallower your depth of field is going to be, and your background is going to be blurry. So a lot of people like to move in on those flowers and then focus it, and then they have to focus that because the background is. So an alternative way of doing that would be to stand back and get away from the minimum focus distance of your lens, and then maybe zoom into those flowers, stop down. Then I will focus to infinity, which makes the foreground blurry. I'll bring up my live view and then back off from infinity until the foreground just becomes in focus. And then your depth of field is pushed out as far as it can go. And so that's one way to make sure that you've got your focus without relying on focus stacking. So your exposure with your histogram, your focus is good, and then your composition is good. You should be able to make a beautiful photograph from there. So.
Nice. I really like that advice. And definitely the focus stacking is interesting. It all makes sense in my head, but I haven't heard anyone talk about doing that. And that would certainly, especially in, you know, today's day and age with social media and everything like that, that will certainly yield a plenty great image for all that. So good advice there. And you'll get a very similar looking image as you would by getting closer. Also, not to go off on a tangent, but the whole focus stacking thing, when there's flowers, when you get really close and then there's like background behind the flowers, then it's like impossible to blend it perfectly. Like, you know, up, especially Mount Rainier, every year you see people where you're like, oh, they did a focus stack and you know, the, you can see the blurriness right behind the flower. Cause it's just so hard to.
Well, that's one reason why I don't like focus stacking. Cause it's kind of a pain in the butt. And a lot of times there's some a little bit of touch up to do and stuff, you know, but person can get better at it, but if I can avoid it, I will. And I think a lot of times people are fixated on making sure they've got a tack sharp focus from front to back. But if you're standing there at your scene, your foreground is going to be, it's going to be more in focus to your eye. And then if you look off into the distance at the mountain in the background, just the diffusion of the atmosphere between your eyes and that mountain is going to take away some focus and contrast. So having a nice sharp focus in the front with a slight softness in the back will help the foreground separate itself from the background. So don't become too fixated on having to have your photographs completely tack sharp from front to back. So and that's kind of my approach to focusing. And focusing is an extremely important component of getting your photograph right in the field.
Of course, of course. Yeah. Hey, well, really appreciate you being here today. Will you wrap us up by telling us where can we find more of your work? Where can we buy from you, learn from you, workshops, tutorials? Give us whatever you got. I'll include all the links down below.
Great. Well, my website is Gary-Randall, Gary-Randall.com. But if you Google my name, I should be the first one comes up, especially if you put in photography.
He's the only Gary Randall out there.
I'm the most famous Gary Randall in the world, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah, no. So, but you can Google my name. I do workshops. I also work with Destination Earth Photo Tours with Chris Byrne, and we do workshops all around the world. Chris is over right now in India photographing leopards and tigers. And so most of my workshops are around the Pacific Northwest in Alaska. Also do a workshop down in Caddo Lake, Oregon coast, Glacier National Park, and my Alaska workshop's the one I love the best. But yeah, so most of all of the stuff that you'll need to know about me is on my website. But I've got a presence on Instagram and Facebook and, you know, all the other ones. But I do try to concentrate on making sure my website's up to date. So.
All right. I'll include all those down below. Again, thank you so much for the time. Super helpful episode. There's going to be a lot of great stuff in here that I think people are really going to enjoy. So thank you so much for spending the time.
Austin, you're the best. I really appreciate you reaching out to me. I really, really appreciate it. And I really enjoyed this. This has been fun.
Alrighty, well, I certainly hope that was helpful for you guys. I know it would have been helpful for me when I was getting going with photography, so I hope it was helpful for you as well. I did want to mention, if there's any topics that you guys would like to see covered in the future on podcasts, you know, things you're struggling with, if there's any guests you know of that you think might be able to cover something interesting, please let me know via email. I do everything I can to try and cover topics that are going to be both interesting and helpful for my listeners, you guys, of course, to listen to. But if there is something that I haven't covered that you're interested in me covering, please let me know. Additionally, if you didn't already know, if you just follow me on the podcast, I post videos usually every couple days on YouTube, on Instagram. You can find me on YouTube, Austin James Jackson Photography. Find me on Instagram, austin.james.jackson. Or do like Gary said, just Google me. I'm the most famous Austin James Jackson. I'm not the most famous Austin Jackson, though. So you got to use my middle name as well if you want to do that. So anyways, thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. Really looking forward to seeing you guys next time. This is Austin James Jackson, and we'll see you later.